Did you know that on September 15th there will be a live at Manning Rust conference? In one Rust full day, you will attend many talks about what's special about Rust, building high-performance web services or video games, about WebAssembly and much more. I already want to be there. But there where? No need to travel? The event is going to be online, of course. If you want to meet the tribe, tune in September 15th to the live at Manning Rust conference. I have added a link to register completely free of charge in the show notes of this episode. I'll see you there.
Thank you for listening to Data Science at Home podcast with Francesco Gadaleta. You are about to get cutting edge insights from the people who are reshaping the world of technology with machine learning, data science, and artificial intelligence. It's time for Data Science at Home. Welcome to the show.
Welcome back to another episode of Data Science at Home podcast. I'm Francesco, podcasting from the regular office of Leuven in Belgium. This is the third episode of the mini series Testing in Machine Learning, and I am again with Adam Liam Smith, who's an expert in testing systems. Hi, Adam, how are you doing? And welcome back.
Hey, Francesco, good to see you again.
So in the last episode, we have been speaking about how to use data science to support testing. And we also touched a bit the synthetic data space. Remember, Adam, it was quite an interesting topic there. In this episode, we are going to expand on some advanced testing techniques for machine learning systems. So Adam, quick intro for you. And then I will start with my annoying questions.
Hey, no worries. So I'm CTO of a company called Dragonfly that specializes in quality and testing of complex systems, and chair of the British Computer Society's special interest group in software testing. And testing machine learning is one of my favorite topics.
And it is mine too. Now, when you say about, you know, when you say testing in machine learning, I would like to focus my attention, at least in this episode, on a particular aspect of machine learning, which is deep learning. Due to the fact that, you know, this is kind of my personal observation, is that neural networks are, you know, considered kind of a new programming language, in the sense that you can indirectly program neurons to perform some sort of functionality. And so this new programming language requires, as our traditional programming languages, testing tools. Now, those who are familiar with static analysis, dynamic analysis for regular code know exactly what I'm speaking about. But how about testing a neural network?
I think the key word you used there, Francesco, was indirectly programming the neuron. I agree. Because you aren't writing the logic that is going into those neurons, writing data. So when we think about, well, when a data engineer thinks about testing their code, or a traditional software engineer, the first thing they'll do is probably think about coverage. Maybe they'll whip out some unit testing tools, some test coverage tools, Sonar or something, and they'll look at things like line coverage, statement coverage, decision coverage, branch coverage, all these different measurements which are related to the logical flow of that kind of code. Now, we can't do that as easily with machine learning. Sure, we can look at the profile of the data as almost a proxy for the coverage, but it's not a measurement of the logical decisions that have been made. So there's actually a few relatively new measurements that try and bring the same thing to machine learning. Have you come across them at all, Francesco?
Yes, I would like to actually ask you what's neuron coverage and what's threshold coverage. I also know about sign change coverage and layer coverage, but I'll let you expand on that, Adam.
Yeah, so I guess neuron coverage is defined as the proportion of activated neurons during a testing cycle divided by the total number of neurons in the neural network. So it's a percentage, and you consider it activated if the value exceeds zero. Threshold coverage, you pick a threshold between zero and one and do that measurement. And there's even some techniques around sign change, where you consider zero as a negative value and look at whether you've got a positive or a negative value coming out. There's a couple more. You mentioned layer coverage there, Francesco. So that's where you look at the different layers and look at how right. the activation values change in like a whole layer.
Yeah, but actually I have a question about this. Like when you, you know, because these are tools or methodologies that have been definitely inspired by, you know, testing in traditional software engineering. You know, like the coverage word is very, I'm very familiar with the coverage part. We already had too many issues when, for example, in the realm of dynamic analysis, the number of possible paths that your CPU, in fact, can execute at runtime can literally explode. So my question is, I mean, my observation is in deep learning, this is kind of normal. This, I mean, explosion of neurons to be tested, right?
Yes, and we have ways of dealing with that with traditional systems. So you know, it's very rare that anyone would attempt to do every kind of possible input or variation because you quickly get into obvious problems. And they might be compute, or it might be time, or it might be the it might be time in terms of resources, it might be time in terms of deadlines. So one of the techniques we use in traditional testing is actually combinatorial testing. Mm-hmm. So if I go to a really kind of simple example where I'm buying something online, maybe it's a book, a video, or a software. So I've got a type of product that I'm buying online. I've probably got a type of credit card used and maybe something like a quantity. So right. the simplest kind of test you can do is test you know, each value, maybe test a book, test a video, test a software, test each kind of credit card, test a few different quantities. But that's quite a light test, obviously. And when you're dealing with complex systems, that's often not enough, especially those that are data driven. So we get into something called combinatorial testing, which is also called all pairs testing, pairwise testing, n-wise testing. There's a whole bunch of names. Mm-hmm. But essentially what you do is you start to think about the inputs as pairs rather than single items. So maybe I'll make sure that I test an Amex credit card with a book, with a video, and with a piece of software, and with three different quantities. Now, the number of pairs of things, if you have a pair of variables, that's called, let's call it tuple. So the first simple test I described was one tuple tests, where you're just testing each value once. A two-tuple test is where you're testing each possible value across two different inputs together. So that gives you a much larger number of tests, and statistics show that detects way more tests than, way more defects than one tuple and way more defects than three tuple, which is three input variables joined together and looking right. at the combination. So it's kind of traditionally, through lots and lots of research, it's the optimum kind of level of testing for a system that uses traditional logic. And it is black box testing. So you're not looking here at things like neuron coverage and code coverage. You're thinking about what matters to kind of the business problem or the data structures.
I have two questions on this. Like the first is the black box nature, not only of neural networks, but also of the testing strategy. How much does this impact the quality of the testing?
How much does using a two-tuple approach impact the quality of the testing?
Yes, exactly.
It significantly improves it because okay. it significantly improves the coverage with the optimum set of tests. It also lends itself to an automated test generation approach because once you're looking at lots of combinations, you're getting into algorithms, it becomes right. easier to write some code to figure out your tests and the optimum data inputs rather than to do it manually, which is good practice as well.
That would have been my second question. So I guess you anticipated me. There is no manual intervention in defining this testing strategy, right? It's fully automated, right?
That's right, except in the simplest example, where someone might do it on paper. It's usually, there's loads of open source scripts floating around that will do this. There's commercial tools that do it as well.
Cool. Very, very interesting. And can you mention who is using this or in which domain, if you don't want to make names, of course?
Sure. I mean, so many of the big consultancies, you know, this is part of their standard approach when they approach this type of problem. It's very common across industry. But what I don't know is the applicability to ML. Mm-hmm. So I think in terms of being applied in practice with traditional systems, it's very, very mature. In terms of ML, I've definitely read reports and research of evaluations showing very, very promising results using this approach, but it is too early really to say it's a successful approach. And what I would really note is they're using, just like when we talked about coverage just now, they're using the activation functions and looking at combinations of activation functions, which is a white box approach. And as I said in episode two, you know, a lot of the time we have to take a black box approach. People will do more testing of ML in a black box fashion than a white box fashion over a period of 10 years.
Right.
The other thing I don't know is whether combinatorial testing applied to a black box is an effective way of testing machine learning. So not looking at the activation function, but looking at the data structure in the same way I did with the online store example.
Right. I understand. Adam, do you think this is a methodology that can generalize nicely across domains? And if so, how much human intervention would be required if, for example, we decided to apply this testing strategy from the financial domain to, let's say, social media or payments, or, well, that's still financial, but I mean, you know what I mean, like, or healthcare, for example.
It applies across domains in traditional software, certainly, because it is about inherently how we write logic and how we process data. Whether it translates to ML and generalizes to it and generalizes across different domains and different algorithms, I think it should, because ultimately the whole point of ML is that the behavior is driven by the inputs. And by observing those inputs and looking at appropriate combinations of those inputs without knowledge of activation functions or the inside of the model, it should provide a test optimization technique to solve the problem you referred to before, which is if you generate all the inputs, your CPU is going to be going all night.
And now, Adam, there was another advanced testing strategy that you wanted to speak about, and definitely I have questions for you, which is more related to probabilistic approaches. And so, can you expand on that?
That's right. So research and surveys of machine learning specialists tell us that the two biggest problems they encounter are talking to customers about goals and testing the systems, whether it's in the data science validation process or a wider testing phase. And one of the things I talk to people about is specifying their quality requirements in a different way. So thinking upfront about things like false positives and false negatives when you're discussing the required level of accuracy or correctness for a system. You know, we all know it's very difficult to get everything to 100%, but making sure those expectations are kind of set up front is important. So starting to introduce some statistical language into those requirements is very important for the testing phase, but it's not just accuracy and correctness, it's things that we may call flexibility. So we're developing for this set of operational requirements, how much does this particular stakeholder need the system to be able to flex to unseen data, to unexpected contexts? And the other area is robustness. So, you know, data perturbations that bad people use to try and achieve bad things, you know, adversarial examples. That's a conversation you kind of need to have up front in any kind of high risk scenario. In terms of will your system that you're developing need to maintain its operational performance in adversarial context?
So to make this self-contained, adversarial examples have been observed and abused already a number of times in domains like autonomous vehicles, for example, even in finance, as Adam was anticipating me before this episode. You know, it's basically examples that are forged with the only purpose of fooling the model, fooling the neural network, and let it predict something else. In the case of autonomous vehicles, for example, the adversarial examples have been used for patching with invisible features, invisible to the human eye, of course, features on street signs, for example. And at that point, the car, which was supposed to maintain a limit, a speed limit of, let's say, 50 miles per second, per 50 kilometers per hour or miles per hour, it literally got fooled and just removed that limit from the neural network. So I'm laughing about it, but this is really not funny, because there can be consequences in the real world when these things happen. Now, it has been proved that, and it has been shown as well by many other researchers, which I interviewed a long time ago now in a previous episode, about other certain examples. So they have shown that playing at the stochastic gradient descent algorithm and exploiting some mathematical properties of the backpropagation algorithm of any neural network, they could in fact forge these examples that could fool the network completely. Now, my question to you, Adam, is do we have a coverage of this type of attacks and eventually a testing strategy to prevent or mitigate or eliminate completely the effectiveness of adversarial examples with probabilistic strategies?
So that's really interesting, because correctness and flexibility I can kind of evaluate as a black box. I don't think I can evaluate robustness without generating every possible input in a black box way. I think a white box mechanism for testing, generating adversarial examples to test in order to test for robustness is really, really interesting. And if you could potentially put together something like threshold coverage, combinatorial testing, to get some kind of generation of the optimum set of adversarial examples, that would be hugely helpful for industry.
I believe so. And I think that these testing strategies indeed will be more and more normal in our arsenal of tools for programming machine learning approaches or deep learning methods, for sure. Adam, this was extremely interesting. Thank you very much for being on the show. Is there a contact that the followers of Data Science at Home can bug you with?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter, Adam Leon Smith. That's AdamLeonSmith. Feel free to bug me as long as it's about machine learning and testing.
I'm sure they will. And we will add some of your contacts to the show notes of this episode. As always, thank you very much for being on the show, and talk to you next time.
Thanks, Francesco. Bye-bye.
Did you know that on September 15th, there will be a Live at Manning Rust conference? In one Rust full day, you will attend many talks about what's special about Rust, building high-performance web services or video games, about WebAssembly, and much more. I already want to be there. But there where? No need to travel? The event is going to be online, of course. If you want to meet a tribe, tune in September 15th to the Live at Manning Rust conference. I have added a link to register completely free of charge in the show notes of this episode. I'll see you there.
You've been listening to Data Science at Home podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or Podbean to get new fresh episodes. For more, please follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, or visit our website at datascienceathome.com.